south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, well, this weekend I had another chance to help out a gringo in distress. You know, I do that once in a while. And by the way, that's why I don't answer my phone all that much, because there's always a gringo in distress. Well, not distress in a catastrophic sense. It's just that so many gringos don't speak enough Spanish to be able to maneuver their way around when going and dealing with the locals. Of course, there's always Google Translate, which I hate, because, you know, once you're on it, they're just sucking up all your data, constructing a gigantic profile of you so that they can make money off you, sell your info, spy on you with your permission. Know everywhere you go, every move you make, every inquiry and site you visited. But you knew that already, right? Don't get me started. So anyway, people use Google Translate all the time when speaking to the locals. 98% of the people whose Spanish sucks anyway. And as you know, those of you who've tried it, it's not all that great. By the way, the other day I got pulled over by a transit cop. Now, remember the old gringo trick I've often talked about here on the show? When you get pulled over by a cop, you say, "No hablo español." And 95% of the time, the cop will get so frustrated, they'll just wave you on. Unless, of course, you've been in an accident or something. I'm talking about a regular moving offense or just getting routinely pulled over to the side of the road. You know, they've got those routine roadblock stops here where they'll just pick one car out of 100, whatever. Check your papers, maybe look in the back seat or the trunk. Though that rarely happens to gringos and expats who pull that no hablo español thing. Problem is, though, these days with Google Translate, a lot of cops try to hablo ingles using that app, especially if you're on or near the gringo tourist trail. When you're way out in the boonies, they won't even try. And this time when the lady cop pulled me over and I said, "No hablo español," she pulled up Google Translate and started typing away on her phone. She asked me for the car's paperwork and the insurance coverage, make sure it was up to date. I handed her that. Then she asked me for my license. Now, here's the rub. The driver's license I've been using presently is from another Latin American country, not the one I got stopped in. And technically, in most Latin countries, you can only drive on your foreign license for 90 days, and then you must get a local license, or you're not allowed to drive, or you could get a fine, or worse. And that's why the cop asked me how long I'd been in the country. I said, just about a month, and there was no way for her to prove otherwise, because the only proof of how long you've been in the country is the stamps on your passport, right? And I never carry my original passport with me unless I'm crossing borders or going to a bank to pull some money out. Then they request the original. Anyway, I always carry a paper hard copy of my passport, but never the pages with the stamps on it, just the main page. So even if I got pulled over and a cop asked me for my passport, which has never happened to me, by the way, they only ask for your driver's license. Even so, I've got that paper copy to show them. But again, it doesn't show the stamps, the entries and exits, just the main page. But back to the point, if I would have said I'd been in the country, let's say 4 months, then I'm beyond that 90 days I was talking about where you have to get a local driver's license to drive legally because your foreign driver's license is not valid after 90 days. So when dealing with that transit cop, I got through that hurdle okay. Except she did notice on the driver's license I gave her, which was issued from a neighboring Latin American country. Therefore, all the wording on the license was in Spanish. So she read it. And she noted instantly that driver's license had expired 2 years ago. Then she gave me the evil eye, pulled out her phone, typed in a few words and phrases into Google Translate. They came out in English and she handed the phone to me. It said, "You cannot be driving on this license. It's expired." Then I typed a few phrases into the translator on my phone. I never use Google Translate. I use a fixed app. It does everything internally in my phone. It does not search the cloud or drop any data there. So I typed the following into my phone. "Due to the COVIDian panic of the last 2 years, the Latin American government in question where my license was issued has been very slow. They're dragging their feet on renewing and issuing new licenses. Last time I went back there just a few months ago, it was closed in the lockdown." You know what? She bought it hook, line, and sinker. In fact, she said, "Yes, it's a problem. Our own driver's license bureau was closed down for quite a few months, too." She said, "Buenos tardes," and waved me on. By the way, for that little hack, I'd like to thank my gringo buddy, Chase. who told me he went through the same thing a couple of months ago with a cop and it worked like a charm. Oh, and the thing to remember is Latin American cops aren't all that smart. Remember that show about IQs in Latin America that we did a few weeks ago? Recall the old adage, those who can do and those who can't teach? And those who can't teach get government jobs? Man, do the few good teachers out there hate that one, including my mom. By the way, I asked her once, what is the percentage of really good, inspiring, non-boring teachers out there? In other words, teachers who were just born to do it. That was their calling. She said, 10% or less. I said, how do you come up with that figure? She says, well, just ask any person over 50 years old to tell you the teachers that most motivated them or impacted their lives. And most people can't name more than three. Think of this. You spend 6 months or a whole year with the same teacher, an hour a day, 5 days a week for a half year or a whole year. And then when you're 50 years old, you can't even remember their names. Talk about no lasting impression. And how about this for poor recall? Well, I remember it way back in my first year of engineering school. In fact, it was the very first day of orientation. There was an assembly. The dean of the engineering school gave us a big pep talk. I remember two things that he said. Actually, three. He said, you guys are a very select group just to be able to get into this school. There were about 120 of us, I think. He said, only half of you will graduate. And you successful ones will have two things in common. One, you're organized. Two, you'll write things down and not just notes for class. You'll carry a pen with you. Of course, those were the days when engineering nerds were stereotyped as pencil-necked geeks with pocket protectors. Nope, I never had one. Pocket protector, that is. Ruined a lot of shirts, though. Now, at that orientation where the dean spoke, he also said, of the 50% of you guys that will graduate, about 10% of you will not survive in the private sector and will end up working for government. So I guess that says it all. By the way, as with any career, there's a hierarchy in engineering. You know, there's lots of different degrees. There's electrical, software, architectural engineers, biomedical engineers, nuclear, solar, materials, mechanical, structural, microwave, IT, and telecommunication engineers, to name just a few. But did you know, that is the scuttlebutt between engineers themselves, there's a certain engineering specialty that ranks the lowest in prestige amongst fellow engineers and also has the easiest engineering school curriculum by far? If you guessed civil engineering, you'd be right. You think that might have something to do with the fact that the vast majority of civil engineers end up working for federal, state, or local governments? How mind-numbing a prospect is that? In other words, civil engineers like Rodney Dangerfield get no respect. Hey, look, in every profession, there's a hierarchy. Take medicine. There are some specialties that have no glamour, get no respect at all. Think colon rectal surgeons, chiropractors, and proctologists. But I digress as usual. Point being, the cops here in Latin America, to put it kindly, are not deep thinkers. Does that make me sound like a jerk? I'm just speaking from experience here. Hey, in my couple of decades of living here in Latin America, I've spoken to and have been pulled over by many cops. Just filling you in on what to expect when it happens to you. Now, I did start out the show by mentioning I was on a mission to help a gringo in distress. Here's what happened. Turns out this newbie gringo expat's been down here in Latin America maybe 5 months. His Spanish is about a 1, which is about what I had when I first came down. So he generally hangs with other gringos and expats, which I see as a big mistake. Because many gringos never get out of that cycle. They never get to broaden their horizon and really get to know the locals. Anyway, as are most newbie gringos who don't speak any Spanish, he's addicted to Google Translate, which can be another big mistake because most people who get addicted to that end up using it as a crutch forever and ever. It's like never taking the training wheels off your bike. Anyway, he calls me and says, Johnny, you remember that nice SUV I bought, that Honda CR-V 2018 model? He said when I drove it off the lot, everything was fine, and they gave me a 30-day guarantee. Now it's about 3 months. And all of a sudden, I started it up the other day, and I got 4 idiot lights on the dashboard. Something's wrong with the engine, the sensors, the connectors, I don't know. It still starts and runs okay, and I know almost every Latino car I get into has an idiot light or two on it. As you've mentioned in your show in the past, they don't seem to bother anyone else. But us gringos, when we see lights like that, we want to get them fixed. We want to know what's wrong. It sort of wears on you. You want to get down to the bottom of it. He said, I took it to the Honda dealer. It's a first world place laid out just like a beautiful first world Honda dealer in the States. And the lady behind the desk speaks a little English. I told her the problem and she set me up for an appointment in 3 days and told me the cost just for the diagnostic test is $100. He said, Johnny, I was shocked. Them's first world prices. Things are supposed to be cheap down here. He said, Johnny, you always know a guy who knows a guy. Can you help me out here? Do you know anybody that might be able to do the work at Latino, not gringo prices? Or am I stuck going to the Honda dealership? He said, Johnny, to pay $100 just to do the diagnostics before you even find out what's wrong, I'm afraid to find out what the real repairs will cost. And I said, so you found out the hard way one of the truisms in Latin America, that American franchises coming down from the States are always the same price as up in the States. First world expensive. Then I asked him, have you seen all the little corner hole-in-the-wall mechanic shops everywhere? I mean, every three or four blocks you see one or two of them. You shouldn't judge them by how they look. I know, many of them look so rustic and tacky. Just a little lean-to in a cement slab and a few cracked, scuffed-up plastic chairs for the customers to sit it out. Not at all impressive. But believe me, a lot of these hole-in-the-wall mechanics know exactly what they're doing. It's hard to believe, too, with everything electronic and computerized in cars these days, that these hole-in-the-wall joints, some of them that don't even have running water, can diagnose and fix really sophisticated car problems. Same thing with hole-in-the-wall TV, computer, cell phone, and appliance repair shops, too. Of course, there's always mechanics and repair guys that don't know what the hell they're doing, too. You just have to know the difference. Or know a guy who knows a guy. Just like anything here in Latin America, if you don't have connections, it could be hit or miss. So I took my gringo buddy and his questionable car to an area that was just chock full of hole-in-the-wall appliance repair shops and car mechanics. In a busy, kind of scruffy, run-down commercial section of town. Not in any way dangerous, just scruffy. So we pulled off the main avenue, down a long gravel road. We drove behind some warehouses and commercial buildings, and suddenly we're in a rather big parking lot with little lean-tos on either side of us. Each of them with a mechanic doing his particular kind of work. All of them specialists in their own area. You could say it was kind of a loose co-op of mechanics. There was a guy doing body work and painting cars with three or four cars in various stages of getting bumped out and painted. And that guy didn't even have a lean-to. He was doing it in the open air. Makes you think, what the hell does that guy do during the rainy season? But still, the one he was polishing looked rather sharp, and he had some late model cars there too, so he must have been good because people with money trusted him enough to do their body work and paint. I still don't get how body guys and painters can do that stuff in the open air with the sun as piercing as it is when it's high in the sky. Who knows? Maybe it's their version of an oven. Maybe it's part of their process of baking and hardening the paint, though I doubt it. Now, right next to that guy was an open gravel space about as big as a one-car garage. And next to that, an open-air lean-to about the size of a one-car garage with a guy doing transmissions and alternators. Next to that, another gravel patch the size of a one-car garage. And next to that, another open-air lean-to, again, the size of a one-car garage. And that's where the car diagnostics guy had his business. Now remember, none of these mechanics even had a waiting room or four walls. These were lean-tos. Now, as for this diagnostics guy, he had a Samsung tablet. What he did all day long was diagnose car electronics problems and replace and repair bad sensors and car cameras and such. That was his business. That's all he did. And next to him, the same drill, a gravel patch and a lean-to, another guy doing nothing but car upholstery, strictly upholstery. And next to him, another open-air lean-to with a guy doing nothing but car stereos and wiring audio systems into cars. So everywhere there was that throbbing, pounding, toxic, brain-corroding reggaeton music. Luckily, I had my earbuds, so I could block out at least part of it. Oh, and I mentioned this was kind of a loose co-op of mechanics. They had a system, all right, and in one way, it was pretty efficient. This whole group of maybe six or seven little businesses, and I mean little, they had between them a delivery guy with his own crappy rice-burning motorcycle, and that's all he did all day was take orders for parts, and he'd be zipping in and out every half hour or so. He was their community gopher. Anything one of those mechanics or painters needed, he'd get it on the spot. I even saw him come in and deliver a car window and a bumper, all strapped with bungee cords to the back of his motorcycle. Oh, and get this, they had no municipal water. None of them did, but nevertheless, they did have water. Nope, they didn't steal it from the next door neighbor either. Anytime they needed some for whatever reason, they'd take a 5-gallon bucket, walk to the edge of the lot where there was a big cistern on the ground. Looked like a 500-gallon job. It had its own valve and water spout, gravity feed. One of the mechanics there told me a water truck comes in once a week and fills it up for $25. The mechanics all split the bill 8 ways. Now, don't ask me about the bathroom. I didn't even want to ask. but it looks like they got a deal going with one of the rickety houses on the next lot. I didn't want to find out. Oh, and get this, this mechanic co-op didn't have electricity either. How is that possible, you say? Well, they've got it sometimes, but they're not on the grid. What they have is a little Honda generator, a small one, you know, 2,500 watts. And every once in a while, when they do need electricity for something or other, seems like every 20 minutes or so, someone walks over and pulls the starter cord and the thing pops to life. And then they switch it off again. A hell of a way to be doing business, you might think. Just goes to show, when there's a will, you know the rest. But hey, they get things done, and man, are they cheap. Labor down here in Latin America is so undervalued, while inflation is kicking the hell out of everything else. Food, cars, energy, construction materials, escalating rapidly, just like up in the States. But the cost of labor here in Latin America is still so damn cheap. And it's not just day laborers and mechanics either. I talked to a guy who's in middle management in a bank. Not just a guy stuck in a cubicle. I'm talking about a guy who's got his own office and a personal secretary. He gets $400 a month. And his secretary, $275. He's in middle management and doesn't even earn enough to buy a decent car. So he has a motorcycle. A decent one. At least it's not a rice burner made in India. It's a Kawasaki. He drives it to work every day. All pressed, dressed to impress in his best double-breasted business suit. Try saying that 20 times. Meanwhile, back at the mechanics co-op. We pulled the car into the lean-to of the diagnostic mechanic. He went under the dash and plugged in the connector. So then, what did he charge for the diagnostics analysis? How about nothing? Of course, he knew after my buddy explained about the four idiot lights that he was going to have a client and get some work out of it. So my gringo buddy and I were invited to sit in some cracked and scuffed up chairs, out of the sun, thank God, while he went to work. First thing he did was dig into a stack of flattened cardboard boxes and threw them under the car as a cushion for his back. Apparently not to protect his clothes from grease, dirt, and smudges. Since those flattened cardboard boxes were as dirty and greasy as the cement slab he was laying on, or practically. That's another caution or indication that anytime you bring your car to a mechanic, you should bring some kind of protection for your seats, because once in a while they're going to have to get in the front seat, start up the engine, or work under the glove compartment or dashboard, whatever. And believe me, if you've got cloth seats, you're in for big trouble when that happens. So, as expat Eddie says, make sure you use a car condom. My advice is always to have a couple of extra large plastic hefty bags or a couple of old beach towels in the trunk and make sure you tell the guy to use them. So anyway, my gringo buddy and I sat there for 3 hours while the guy took the front and back bumper off, connected his analyzer, did some diagnostics, pulled out a few wire harnesses, checked the sensors. Turns out, they all were okay. He found the problem, a faulty controller box. He made a few phone calls, located one for $65, and we all took a break for lunch. It took about 45 minutes for his gopher to head out on his little motorcycle and come back with the part. And in the end, the total bill, about $100. Exactly what it would have cost him just to have the diagnostics run at an authorized Honda dealership. Oh, and during the 3 hours we were sitting there, we were occasionally amused by two families of driveway chickens that would get their dander up confronting each other while rooting around and pecking at the grass behind us. Man, those driveway chickens love Cheetos. That's a bad sign, huh? By the way, I took some photos of all that stuff if you're interested in seeing what it looks like up close and personal from a gringo's perspective. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Anyway, bottom line, once you get down here to Latin America and you do need some repairs or analysis done, because, you know, life goes on and that stuff does come up. Don't be a mechanic snob. Don't be poo-pooing because of your gringo standards or whatever. The utility of those little hole-in-the-wall mechanics and repair joints. Most of those guys really know what they're doing, and I'd rather give my money to a little guy who's just making ends meet than some big, impersonal, transnational franchise like a Honda dealership. It really is a good thing to spread your money around locally as much as you can. Plus, the locals will appreciate it, remember you, and treat you well. All right, on a lighter note, an email from Kenny, who's been living in Mexico for 2.5 years now. He says, Johnny, how's it going? All's well with me, but you're right. Mexico is getting more and more dangerous. I'm down here with the wife, but I wouldn't want to bring my kids here. If I did, I'd be worried every time they walked out of the house. But to the point, after living in Merida, Mexico, a while now, I've come to realize there are certain guy, that is, male, rules of etiquette that one must or at least should try to follow. These are unofficial rules that don't necessarily apply in the USA, and I suppose they apply not only to Mexico, but the rest of Latin America too. So without further ado, let me lay them on you. The rules for hombres. Number one, beer, pizza, and barbecue are not acceptable payments for helping another man work on his house or his vehicle. It must be beer and tacos. Number two, when at a party, you can have the last taco, you can have the last beer, but you cannot have both. Number three, if you're out and about and a guy is flirting with a girl, never interrupt, unless the guy is flirting with your girl. Number four, never lend another man your vehicle or anything from your collection of tools. Not because it's a personal thing, though it may be, but because they'll always come back in worse condition. Number five, it's essential that if you pee in a public urinal with multiple urinals, and there's only one guy in there peeing, never belly up and pee right next to him. It's the unofficial but universal every other urinal rule. In macho Latino countries, it's even more ironclad. And finally, Johnny, when living down in Mexico, or probably anywhere else in Latin America, there's rule number six, and it's also ironclad. No matter how clean they are or how many times they've been washed, never ask to borrow another man's shorts. That's it for now, Johnny. Keep those great shows coming. I've been listening for over 5 years now. Signed, Ken in Merida, Mexico. All right, Ken. I agree with most of those things. Except south of Mexico, they're not big on tacos. They're big on tortillas. As for that shorts thing, I can hardly think of a time where a situation like that would ever come up. However, there are times when you're at the beach or the pool when you get an unexpected soaker. And then there's those heavy downpours in the rainy season. Though still hardly an excuse to borrow someone else's shorts. Wait a minute, I take that back. I did think of a case. When you're at a party or someone else's house and suddenly you get a visit from Montezuma and he's looking for revenge. All right, yanking the wheel now. Here's something that may or may not shock you. Whether it does or not, the news is very un-PC. Doesn't surprise me a bit. In fact, I see it all the time. But here's further proof that discrimination in Latin America amongst Latin Americans is very real and quite intense in some regions. In fact, according to brand new data from the Pew Research Center, Latinos experience discrimination from other Latinos at about the same rate as they do from non-Latinos. This is research data coming from Latinos living up in the United States. We'll get to the ones living in Latin America later. Anyway, in a report published just Monday, the nonpartisan think tank Pew Research Center found that 27% of Latino surveys said they had personally experienced discrimination or were treated quite unfairly by other Latinos in the last year. The survey also found that Latinos with darker skin faced prejudice from other Latinos nearly twice as much as Latinos with lighter skin. The survey also showed that Latinos having darker skin and being born outside the United States are associated with a much greater chance of this type of discrimination. That, according to Luis Noy Bustamante, a Pew Research analyst and author of the report. All right, me, Johnny here. You know, I know lots of Latinos who point to their own lighter-skinned relatives, saying that they drop hints about other Latinos' darker skin color as an insult. I know some Latino parents here in Latin America whose dark-skinned children have suffered bullying at school from their lighter-skinned classmates. But back to the survey. It says here, nearly half of all the respondents, 48%, said they'd had family members and friends make racially insensitive comments and jokes about other Latinos. That certainly happened in the case of Matthew Luis Riveras' experience. Riveras grew up in Humboldt Park, historically a Puerto Rican neighborhood in Chicago. He points out, as a child, he was conditioned to believe that Puerto Ricans were better than Mexicans and that Puerto Ricans and Mexicans were rivals. He says, quote, "I grew up hearing Mexican parents saying they didn't want their daughters to date Puerto Ricans, and I've heard people in my own family say, don't ever date Mexicans." It's a proven fact that says that skin color plays a major role in determining how much discrimination Latinos face within their own culture. And it's all about the country you come from and the color you are. In fact, in a report published in November of 2021, Pew researchers found that when Latinos in the United States, that is, were given the option to self-identify using the Yaden-Osfield 10-point skin color scale, 80% of Latinos self-identified with a lighter skin tone than they actually possessed. In other words, they believe they're lighter than they actually are. The article then goes on to say, "It's an uncomfortable truth to reckon with, especially given that Latinos themselves are often racialized and subject to bigotry from other quarters. But to find out just how much bigotry exists within their own cultures is something that's rarely discussed. By the way, at the end of the article, it states there's a tiny sliver of optimism to be found in the Pew report that younger Latinos are more likely to say or admit they witnessed a family member or friend make negative comments or joke about other Latinos, whereas many older Latinos are guilty of it but won't admit to it, meaning perhaps that younger Latinos are a bit more sensitive to that kind of discrimination than older folks are. All right, me, Johnny here. You know, I've seen dozens of cases here in Latin America where Latinos display exactly that kind of discrimination within their own groups and families. Skin color and eye color play huge roles in determining how much discrimination a Latino will face, even at school and on the job. In fact, I've seen it over and over. There'll be a kid within a family that has green eyes, and that kid will be the star of the family forever. The so-called fair-haired boy or girl. Where do you think that term came from? I'll tell you, I've been at parties, in public places, and in elevators, standing next to Latinos I don't even know, I've never met. And they're talking about some special kid in the family, a kid who's got lighter skin, lighter hair, or green eyes. Being tall is on that list, too. Oh, and another thing that struck me kind of strange when I first encountered it. You'll often hear Latinas describe someone in their family as blonde, rubia. Then when you meet that person, their hair's not blonde at all, but dark brown. Not black, though, but dark brown. Seems like any Latino that doesn't have jet black hair is considered blonde, rubia. There are grades of blonde, though. Rubia oscuro means dark blonde. Rubia claro means light blonde. But in fact, blonde as we know it up in the States almost never exists naturally here in Latin America. It's just not in the genetic mix. Though, just like up in the States, there are tons of bottle blondes down here. Almost none of them have that kind of hair naturally. Though I have to admit, it's mostly Latinas. The ladies, not the guys, that talk about this stuff between themselves. Those kids, especially the lighter-skinned ones with the green eyes, they're the superstars of the family, and they always remain so. They're spoiled, they get the royal treatment, and they know it. The sad thing is, more than a couple of Latino friends have told me they want to marry a tall girl with light skin, so their kids can have lighter skin, because then they'll have a leg up on everyone else. I've got at least a half a dozen Latino friends who've done just that. Most of them are not together with their ladies anymore, but they got exactly what they wanted. Taller, lighter-skinned kids. The fact is, the way the culture is down here, they will get a leg up. Nope, life ain't fair, but for some, there's always a workaround.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.